Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. What a week we had. Nobody will believe all the excitement that we had this week. I was talking to a young man, but I'll get into that later. Also, let me say, we have a new leader for the Sambo of the Year Award. We have a new leader, Ron Singleton, Commissioner Ron Singleton, the one who stole the radio station. It has taken over the number one spot, but I'll get into that later. I want to talk about this guy who I met with earlier during the week who spoke about all the police killing that exists. I was in St. Louis earlier this month for the Michael Brown Memorial. I was there in St. Louis with the Ruark House, and we had a splendid time. And we was at the spot where Michael Brown was murdered and shot. But this guy told me something that was really pierced my heart. And one thing, I don't condone violence, but I don't step away from violence either. Because any time that you can shoot and kill someone and there's no penalty, then I got a problem with that. And law enforcement, what they have done, they shoot and kill at will. See, black folks don't stand up when it's their family. Then they'll want to fight, stand up, and be all mad only when it's their family. But what's important is that we have to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. This young man told me something. He said, and it caught my attention because he's not a violent person. He told me, he said, well, the reason why the police kill and get away with it is that there's no penalty. He said, what if every time a police officer shoot and kill a young man, somebody go and kill somebody in his family? Ooh, I said, nah, I can't condone violence. I told him, he said, but just think about it. He said, I'm not saying that somebody should do this. What I'm saying is that will cut down on these cops killing. For instance, when Michael Brown was murdered, what if someone been sitting at that guy's house when he got home? What if? And all these other killings around Breonna Taylor, and all these people that shot and killed black folks. What if? I'm just saying, what if? I'm not condoning violence, so don't say he's I'm not. Only thing I want to say, I want to give you something to think about. I want to give you something to think about. Because when it stunned me to hear a young, because you don't hear black folks talking like that no more. They'd rather kill each other. You know, they'd rather shoot each other, you know. They'd rather be a sellout to this white devil. And this is what they do, you see. But this really got my attention because he said, his exact words were said, what if every time one of these police officers go out here and murder someone, someone in their family get murdered. I said, wow, that was a man. I didn't anticipate that. I did not. But you got to understand how important it is. See, the struggle that has taken place in recent years is Benson Hobbs a case in point, one that holds a number of lessons for the American people. The fight in Benson Hobbs is a war. It's not a conflict. It's a war of whether the residents of Benson Harbor will have prosperity, democracy, and clean water or live in poverty under the heels of open rule. See, this place is ran by the corporation. They got these commissioners. They got them all. They're all a bunch of sellouts. They sellouts. And it's almost embarrassing, you know, as a people that has been traumatized by for 450 years of abuse, mistreatment, and torture, hanging. To this day, even then, though we may look like people of no hope, God has chosen us. God has chosen us to be the elite. We just have to get rid of these sellouts. Once we get rid of these sellouts, we can do so. And we got sellouts all over the country. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. You see, I know it's even hard to believe that in this year, 2022, that we have a county in Michigan, which is Barron County, with a legal system this antiquated and racist. Well, it's even harder than that is no one at the state or national level is taking action to remedy the situation. Black folks don't care until it happens to our family. Then we want to fight. Too late. You got to fight now. You got to fight before something happens. Because they're coming. They're coming. Whether we like it or not, they are coming. This is what they do. And if you go to court, you got a 99.9% chance of being convicted, even with no evidence. I'm a perfect example of that. But I fight. I fight every day. You see, the Black Holocaust from 1619 to 1861, more than 15 million Africans were sold in slavery. Over 35 million were killed by slave traders, making it the greatest Holocaust the world has ever known. See, not everything that is faced can be changed. Not everything. But nothing can be changed until you face it. You have to love life enough to struggle for progress. Everyone's future depends on this. The future of our children depends on this. Never underestimate the power of stupid people in a small town, even in a large crowd. Never underestimate the power of stupid people. Ben Harvey is a perfect example. When you have stupid people in control of the government, and what they do to the people is criminal. But the people are not strong enough to stand up to them. See, they got the support of law enforcement, the courthouse. They got these guys. These are better people. That's what they do. See, but one day, many will hang their heads in shame when they realize the evil they defended and the heroes they ridiculed. God knows. He already knows. He already knows. You can't leave those people who created the problem in charge of the solution. You can't. These guys didn't know what to do. They knew the water was contaminated, but they didn't know what to do. They didn't have the brains. They're a bunch of, well, I'm going to leave that part alone. But remember this. The law system is like bleach. It worked perfect for white folks, but destroyed colors. Remember that. And don't let that get you, because that is the holy truth and nothing but the truth. So help me. We have a new leader in the Sambo of the Year War. We have a new leader. I guess stealing the Radio's 5.3, people got wind of that, and they voted, and they now has Ron Singleton. You might call him a commissioner or whatever, but I don't call him nothing. He's nothing. You might call what has happened is you might understand that this guy stole a whole radio station. He's like the mafia on this radio station. He's trying to control who can be on it. And the bad part, he even stole money from me. But it's okay, because we know his day is coming. He also was working with this guy, Walker. He was the chief of police. And they raided the Benhammer Police Department pension fund. And they caught him, and they had to sign this decree that they was going to pay the money back. Well, somehow, knowing Benton Harbor, they always let their friends off, but the people suffer. This is what happened then. And when this guy retired from the police department, he was, I think he was a corporal. I don't think he was a sergeant, but he may have been. But He's getting lieutenant pay for the last 10 years. So what he's doing, he's stealing money from the residents of Benton Harbor. That's exactly what he's doing. He's stealing money from the residents of Benton Harbor. Oh, the residents ain't going to do nothing because they're afraid. They're afraid. The only thing they'll do, they'll stand behind these guys knowing that they're destroying their families and everything else. And number two, Marcus Singer. Some of y'all call him Marcus Muhammad, but he's Marcus Singer to me. He's a scumbag, a low-life scumbag. Minister Farrakhan was at my home when this guy, and he asked this guy to run for mayor. But he asked him, he said, will you take care of the people? He said it three times, and three times this guy lied. He couldn't wait to when we got him in to be the mayor, exactly what happened. He flipped on us right then. He started kissing these white people butts left and right. He was, if there was no white butt to kiss, he'll go out and look for a white butt to kiss. That's why he lost that title, Muhammad. He's Marcus Singer. You know, if you want to call him Muhammad, you call him Muhammad. But his name is Singer. And then we have Seats. Now, he's supposed to be a preacher at a church, you know. And I tell you this. This is one guy I wouldn't shake his hand for nothing in the world. Blood is dripping from his hand. Dripping. I mean, every time he take a drink, a glass of alcohol, he leaves blood prints all over. And he's in third place. See, Ron Singleton has 6,322 votes. Marcus Singer, Muhammad, has 6,312 votes. Judge Mayfield has 2,290 votes. Seats has 6,180 votes. His mama sings my letter. Come on, give her some love, y'all. You can do better with her. Give her some love. She only got 5,940 votes. Then we have the chief of police, Dan McGinnis, with 5,925. The Sandal of the Year award is such a good thing. It has waking up this whole nation. People all over is howling and screaming about this. And we're going to have a nice dinner in December, and we're going to make sure that everybody gets their award if they win. We're only going to have a first place and a second place. But to be nominated for this is really a big deal because we have to stand up for the community. It's all about the community. You know, it ain't about these sellouts. It's about the community. And if we don't put the pressure on them, they're going to continue doing exactly what they've been doing. I'm talking about these folks, you would never believe what they have done to this community. And they think they're doing something. This guy named Jerry Edwards, now we put him in office. Anyway, but when nobody vote for him, nobody. And this guy told people, y'all don't like what we're doing. Y'all move out. You ain't doing nothing, dummy. You're not doing a thing. You are not doing a thing. You guys are just sitting up there stealing money from the city of Benton Harbor and the residents. That's all you're doing. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. I want you to vote today. You can vote by sending me an email. My email is BANCO. 9342@sbcglobal.net. And my secretary will handle it, and we will tally the votes and make sure that we're doing what we need to do. But give these guys some love. These guys need love, you see? Show them that we know who they are. You got a guy who stole a radio station. Stole a radio station. And he acts like he's the mafia or something. You know, stole money from the city of Benton Harbor. Still stealing money from the city of Benton Harbor. All they had to do is check with, his rank when he got before he retired. I guess he changed the document. I don't care about that. Let's get him, though. But look, don't forget, it's crucial that you get out and vote. You can send me an email. You can send it to BANCO9342@sbcglobal.net. And you can choose your sample. And give these guys some love. They deserve it. They're destroying our community. They're destroying the future of our children. They don't care about none of that stuff. All they care about is themselves. So let's stop them. Let's stop them. Let's stop them. Look at this city. There's no excuse in the world this city to be like this. With all the money that's poured into this city, thanks to the Benton Harbor Community Water Council, we get it. We the one went out, and they want to attack us because we went out and tried to help the resident of Benton Harbor. Contaminated water. Nobody should have unsafe water. Listen, on that note, I'm going to bring in my first guest, and I want to make sure that I'm where I need to be. Our first guest is going to be, let's look. Our first guest is going to be Ms. Foster. And let's make sure we're doing this thing right, because there's nothing more important than getting it right. And we want to make sure we're doing all the things that we're supposed to do to make it happen. There's nothing more important than that. And I have to say, Ms. Foster Five, for okay, give me a minute. Ms. Foster, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. And yourself?
Oh, we just rocking and rolling and rolling and rocking, trying to make it happen. And I know that you have quite a story to tell, and we're going to get all you guys on so y'all can tell it. And we're international. We're not just national. We're not just local. We're international. We're all over the place, and everything is going great. And I want to give you enough time to tell your story, so let's get right into it. Talk to me about you, and also tell me about why you're here today.
All right. I wish to thank you for this opportunity, and certainly thanks to our president who gave us these assignments after speaking to your radio station, our persons in charge there. And I am Jobina Foster. I'm a registered nurse, and I want to talk about the Homer G. Phillips nurse's experience. I went to Homer G. Phillips in 1954, a hospital that is comprised of, at that time, 600 beds. I went there for my nursing career. The hospital has several careers that individuals can be engaged. However, I was fortunate enough to be in the nursing program. I stayed there 43 years. Excuse me. And then during that time, I was assigned to the pediatric department. That is the care of children. 1 year after being there for 5 to 6 years, I was transferred to the internal medical department where I took care of adults, male and female. And I must say that during my time there, it was quite an experience of being in a facility so beautiful as the Homer G. Phillips Hospital, located at 2601 North Whittier in St. Louis, Missouri. This hospital was built in 1937, and it was built simply because there was an attorney by the name of Homer Gilliam Phillips who wanted a hospital and health care for the black community. And he was quite an activist in trying to get this hospital for the black community. And sure enough, working with the city fathers and the monies that were available in bond issues and tax results, what have you, he was able to get monies for the hospital to be built. It was finished in 1937. Ever, he was not able to see the dream of the hospital that he saw and had the vision of. He was murdered, and to this day, we still don't know who were the culprits. But getting back to some of the activity there at the hospital, I can say that it was like a family affair being there in that community, because everybody knew everybody. Also, we had workers who lived in the community, and also not only were we going to the nurses program, there were four other programs that one could apply and get certificates and degrees from. The laboratory, the x-ray department, I just met a gentleman who said he knew the director of the x-ray department at Homer Phillips. And then there was the medical records department. We just had one of the wives of our doctors to expire, and we had a big write-up in our local newspaper about her. She went through the medical records school there. We also had a department whereby you could go and become a laboratory technician. So we had five schools there, and I cannot overlook the fact that it was the largest hospital that trained the nurses and the doctors in the black community and from afar, all over the United States and outside of the United States, in order to get their training and certificates and their degrees. Doctors as far away as from Meharia, and also doctors that came in from the eastern part of the United States, Howard University. And we must note that during this time, I said 1954 to 57 was when I was in the school there, segregation was very much well alive. There were two city hospitals, one for the white, and once this one was built, it was for the black. However, we did serve anyone that came through our doors, and certainly it was known as the first trauma center in the United States, because on Friday and Saturday nights, that's what we did, quite a bit of surgery regarding those who had been in car accidents, shootings, as we are having a number of shootings and killings now. But it was well known throughout the United States and abroad. You can hear the stories from many of physicians and nurses in a documentary called The Color of Medicine. It is on YouTube, and you can pull it up. We also have a book that's out, and it's called Climbing the Ladder, Chasing the Dream, and it's the history, in addition to what I'm saying about the Homer G. Phillips Hospital. I must say that that hospital gave me the best training in the world for the amount of money that my mother and father were able to put together to send me through that school for 3 years. Today, I don't know if anybody can go through a nursing program for that little amount of money that was given to the school for us to get our training. As I mentioned before, we had nurses from all over the United States, particularly from the southern part of the country, and there we met our friends who are friends to us now. And even if we went into some of these states, we could call them and let them know we'll be there and we can have a lunch together. And that's because we put together a directory. We graduated 1,037 nurses during that period of 1937 when the hospital was built, and we had the first graduating class to graduate in 1922. And thereafter, an alumni association was formed in 1923. So these 1,000 nurses that we can locate as many as 100 when we get to have a reunion, and it sometimes is 100 plus in years before this COVID locked us down, we could go and be in contact with them by phone, by visit, and certainly reconnect all of our friendships. And it was just a lovely community to have been involved and evolved into these long-lasting friendships. Let me tell you about the community in itself where this great hospital was built. And when you pull it up, you'll see the magnificent building that sits on the corner, 2601 North Whittier, St. Louis, Missouri. The brick is so beautiful and so well kept that after 20 years, it was an empty building just sitting there because in 1979, the hospital was closed.
Mm.
And it was quite a fight that hospital was closed. Throughout the years that I was there, you always had the threat of the politicians going to close Homer G. Phillips Hospital. As I mentioned before, there were two hospitals, two city hospitals, one for the white, one for the black. But during the time of budget restraints and segregation, we certainly had to deal with living on pins and needles from one day to the next, not knowing when one of the new politicians as the mayor and his team would come in and say, yes, let's close the black hospital. Well, sure enough, in 1979, it occurred. And I happened to be there when all of the activities that came about in that community, you won't believe until you look at one of those videos on YouTube regarding the dogs, the water hose, the policemen on horseback, the fence, and all of the activities that involved us moving our patients from the hospital down to the White Hospital. It was quite a sight to see. And to be involved in it, it was very scary. It was very sad. And we often wondered, where would our patients go and how would they be treated? Today, this millennium, we can look at some of the care that our patients are getting. And we can hear some of the stories about how our patients are still being treated. And I can tell you that it's little to no different than it was back in that day. And we just recognize, and it's been going on for years, and we have been saying it, that when you close those hospitals, the nursing schools that are attached, you also close those schools. So therefore, we have the nursing shortage throughout those years that I have been a nurse from 1957 and when I retired in 1999. It's still today a nursing shortage. However, we are looking to see what the future will bring, because as we get invitations to go to various nursing schools that are being associated with the new hospitals that move to the county, you see that year during 1978 and 79, we had a bit of the white flight. So therefore, it was happening in our neighborhood. And when the hospital was closing, that meant jobs were being lost. And so therefore, our people in the community had to seek other housing, also jobs. So everybody that went to the city hospital and was offered a job, we had to reapply even though we were all city employees from the Homer G. Phillips Hospital. It was all under the city government.
Very good. Ms. Foster, I got to bring Ms. Jackson, but I promise you that I'm going to have y'all on as often as y'all like to come on so y'all can have some time because, you know, we want to make sure that that this word get out. I used to live in St. Louis, Maryland Heights, and I used to go to the church on Page. I can't remember the name of the church, but that was my church there. And I was just in St. Louis on the 5th, 6th, and 7th, I believe it was. And I tell you, next time I come, I'm going to make sure that I get a chance to at least call you and talk with you. But you always welcome to come on the show. But I got to bring, it's four of y'all, so I got to make sure everybody get enough time. But listen, let's talk soon. Let's make this thing happen. And like I said, we're international. Just everybody is listening to you. We know we have, and before the week out, over 10,000 people will hear your voice. So stay focused, and let's do what we need to do. And I really, really appreciate everything you're saying. I've read up a lot about y'all. And we're going to continue to do so. But I want to bring in Ms. Jackson. Give us some time to talk. And then if we have time left, I'll bring you back. All right, Ms.
All right.
I will do, Ms. Foster. Have a great day, but stay with us. All right. Let's bring in the Let's bring in Ms. Jackson. Let's see, Ms. Jackson.
Hey.
Ms. Jackson,
good afternoon.
Are you there?
I'm fine. And you, sir?
I'm great again. We just rocking and rolling here and rolling and rocking, trying to make it happen.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity that we can share our special history. I graduated from Homer Phillips in 1963. I was born there, that same hospital, November 22nd, 1941. My husband was born there September 1941. My sister was also born there. So we were actually born at the Homer G. Phillips Hospital, and I retired from nursing in 2012. I had an aunt that graduated from Homer Phillips with the class of 1955. Her husband was also a resident, and he received his training in anesthesia. So we have sort of a family history going on there. Also, my aunt and my mother completed the LPN program where they received their hands-on training, even though the education was received at the, Hadley Technical Schools. So we have a lot of history there, but I just thank God for that treatment because we have a history, the nurses from Homer G. Phillips Hospital School of Nursing, we have a history. And the educators, the doctors, the physicians, the hospitals, they always knew that if they hired a Homer G. Phillips graduate, they hired the best. Our program was a 3-year program. They trained us in all facets of nursing. We had 5 different practicums we had to be trained under, including psychiatry, pediatrics, medicine, surgery, orthopedics, eye, ear, nose, and throat. So they covered that whole gamut in 3 years. Our instructors were top-notch. They did not stand for any foolishness. They were very strict. We had to keep our hair cut a certain length. Our uniforms had to be just so. We could not wear all the flashy fingernail polish and all the hair down your neck and all of the tattoos and everything. Very strict. And they demanded that we be professional. We very seldom had someone that did not pass the state board. We had a training group set up, and we had a special book that we had to study during our senior year, and it took us 2.5 years to go up to Jefferson City, Missouri, where the state capital is, to take the state board exam. So they prepared us to take that exam. And when we graduated, we were able to go wherever we wanted to go. We even had a nurse that was in the military. And as I looked through the map of the United States, we had, let's see, out of 50 states, we had 31 states that were represented. There were 390 from Missouri and 56 from California. There was even a student from Africa and 2 from Hawaii. So to date, we think we have maybe 465 students that are alumni members that are still alive. Our oldest graduate was from the class of 1926, and she died, let's see, at her 108th birthday. And it was believed back then that she was America's oldest living registered nurse. So as Yobina said, the hospital, the School of Nursing, closed in 1968. So back then, the city decided to form the Municipal School of Nursing. So between the time that they closed, they opened, and then they closed 11 years later, they had 416 graduates. So even though the hospital is not open as a hospital per se, it is still open, as Yobina said, as a senior apartment building. There are 220 units, and the building is still awesome, and we're still a beacon in the community. So our Alumni Association has been giving scholarships to nursing students for many years, and I have the scholarship committee to get a little bit of stats for me. And this is just over the last 10 years, we have given out 14 scholarships to students, and these have to be generic students. In other words, they are trying to get their education, and they're like as a beginning student. It's not like it's someone trying to get a master's, but it's those that are trying to get a BS. And we include not only the community colleges, but also different schools of nursing, the St. Louis College of Health. We had a student that graduated in Birmingham, Alabama, and also I believe there's one from Louisiana. So, yes, we're not together having a school of nursing per se, but we are still very visible in the community. So we just thank you for the opportunity for sharing our history. Thank you, and stay blessed.
And listen, I want you to know that, you know, we support you 100%, and we're going to do everything within our power to make sure that, you know, you guys get support down there that you need. I know a lot of people in St. Louis, and there's a lot of people listening to my show from St. Louis. And the Uhura House, you know, over there on West Florence, those are my people also. The FBI raided their office on the July 29th. But, you know, we was also down there to support them, to let them know that, you know, that we're here to fight, you know. And there's never been a fight that we have not liked, because when we fight together, we win. And this is one of the things we don't do. We don't fight together, stand together. But I want you to know that I stand with you, and we're going to win. We're going to, whatever needs to be done, we're going to make it happen. And that's a promise and not a say-so. A lot of times people just talk. You know, I'm a man of action, you know, and I don't care about the elected officials, because most of them ain't nothing to me. But the point is, we have to make sure we're doing what we have to do, and make sure that we're doing what needs to be done for our community and for the future of our children. And I just want to thank you so much for being on the show, and I'll bring in my next guest. And listen, this is not the end. We're going to talk some more and make sure that this word get out. That's a promise. Let's talk soon.
Okay, very
thank
good.
You. All right.
I remember
now.
You said it.
All right now. You got it. Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell you, this is really, really, really educational. And I want to make sure that people understand the importance of this, how black people can work together. And let's bring in Ms. Jones. Ms. Jones from St. Louis, Missouri, talk to me.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. My name is Yvonne Jones. I am the current president of Homer G. Phillips Nurses Alumni Incorporated. I was born at Homer G. Phillips in 1947, and I was in the last class in 1968 for Homer G. Phillips. To reiterate, Homer G. Phillips was a 600-bed hospital located at 2600 North Whittier. A hospital is surrounded by St. James Baptist Church, Sumner High School, which you should know is the first black high school this side of the Mississippi, Annie Malone's Children's Home, and if you know about Billy Burks and Sarah Lewis, then you've been in St. Louis. We have filed a federal lawsuit against a Mr. Paul McKee. Mr. Paul McKee and his corporation has bought up a lot of the black area's land, and he has done nothing with it. So what he decided to do is to build a three-bed facility, which is located at Jefferson and Cass, and it's near this space station that's being built. He decided to name it Homer G. Phillips. He didn't discuss it with us. He knew nothing. He said he knew nothing about us. We asked him to take the name down. The Homer G. Phillips Nurses Alumni has nothing against a three-bed facility compared to a 600-bed facility, but we just don't want that name on that building. And the reason why is because Homer G. Phillips is not at Jefferson and Cass. Homer G. Phillips is at 2600 North Whittier, and it still stands as a senior citizen building. Also, we have the trademark. The Homer G. Phillips Nurses Alumni have the trademark of the Homer G. Phillips. We decided we had to go to court because he even refused to talk to us. So we have filed a federal lawsuit. Hopefully we will get a trial with the judge, and we will have jurors on this trial. It's still in the making. The Homer G. Phillips in the Ville is recognized at the History Museum, which you know is at the Volliver and Lindell. It's recognized at the George B. Bashan African American Museum, which is located at 2223 St. Louis Avenue. And, of course, Homer G. Phillips is on display at the National History Museum of African American History and Culture, which is located in Washington. Homer G. Phillips is also recognized in the DVD called The Color of Medicine, which you can get on Amazon. I think it's $19. And also the recently published book, Climbing the Ladder, Chasing the Dream. Let us be clear. We are not against the facility. We want to protect the name and legacy of Homer G. Phillips by having the current name just removed from that building. And of course, Mr. Paul McKee has said he will not recognize Homer G. Phillips Nurses. He decided that he would appease us by putting a plaque on the building saying Homer G. Phillips Nurses. Well, we have a plaque already, which is located 2600 North Whittier. We don't need a plaque on the building. We want him to take the name down because that's going to be confusing. Homer G. is not at Jefferson and Cass. Is located at 2600 North Whittier. So, again, we've had to file a lawsuit in the federal court asking to have a trial to try to get that name removed from that building. And, of course, he's saying he's not going to remove it.
And let me ask you this, because I think it's important. Do you have, the community supporting you on this?
They did do what do you call it, names? They did that. We have had rallies, which Reverend Koch will explain to you, because on the first and the third Saturdays of each month, we are down there at that location, which is at Jefferson and Cass, in front of the building, protesting. So the community knows about it, and Reverend Koch will explain to you. There are some people, the mayor, Corey Bush, and others, that have fit, that are against that name, and we have a resolution that was done by Mr. Tashara Jones, if I got that right, a resolution that was done saying that they were against that name being on the building. But again, Paul McKee has ignored us.
Hey, do you happen to know Todd, one of the elected officials in St. Louis?
Say who? What's the name again?
His last name is Todd. I can't think of his first name at this time.
We've got a letter going out with the names of the people who are elected officials that are against that name being on the building. I have name is on there.
All right. If his name is not on there, I'm going to contact him so you can get his support. And I'm going to contact some other people in St. Louis. So you can get their support too, because they're all part of what I do, and we're gonna make it happen.
because there's strength in numbers. I believe anything you do, you got to have the numbers. If you don't have the numbers, it's no good. I have done quite a bit in my lifetime, but the most important thing, I believe, in having numbers. I believe that if you get the numbers, you can do. That's why this radio show is so important. And people going listening to you, and they're going to be all over the country and even internationally. I'm going to get emails from all over, and we're going to make sure. The only thing I don't want other black people joining white folks trying to go against you guys. That's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of black folks. They love to be around white folks, and they love their whatever agenda they have. They love to be part of that agenda rather than being part of the black agenda. And we have it right here in Benton Harbor. You wouldn't believe a small community like this. And we have more sellouts than we almost think we got people here. And it's almost ridiculous.
Right.
So absolutely.
Right. And you brought up an excellent point, because Paul McKee has this black lawyer who's speaking for him. His name is Daryl Piggy, and he's the one that's really more insulting to us than Paul McKee, saying he's not even recognizing us and that we don't even count. So you are exactly correct.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? We have to show them. One of the things I do, that's why we have the Sambo of the Year Award for these guys. We make sure people, to me, the worst thing in the world is a black man selling out his community and riding with these evil, wicked people, because they're wicked, but yet still they want to ride with them and do what they want to do rather than do what's good for the community. I don't like it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't like it, and I tell you this in a minute. I don't like it. So what you're doing is wonderful, and you can count me in, okay? And Dr.
Yes.
Tucker, he y'all call him Red or whatever y'all call him, but he's a good friend of mine, also in St. Louis, and I'll make sure he supports you also. So I got a lot of friends down there, a lot of good people down there, a lot of professional people I got in St. Louis, and let's talk during the week, and then maybe we can strategize a little bit and make this happen. But listen, I got to bring in the preacher, and make sure that, because I know I want to make sure he have enough time to say his word, because I know most preachers are long-winded. But I want to give him enough time to say whatever he got to say and make it happen. But listen, I want you to know that I'm with you 100%.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. St. Louis, Missouri. Let me bring in Reverend Cush and let him tell us what he wants us to know. Reverend Kevin Cush, talk to me.
Yes, this is Reverend Kevin Cush, and I'm the pastor of the beloved Community United Methodist Church that is located at 3115 Park Avenue in St. Louis, Missouri. And I come representing the Change the Name Coalition. There has been, you mentioned Dr. Tucker. Dr. Tucker actually is a member of the Change the Name Coalition already. He's already serving. We have representatives from the Aldermanic Board in St. Louis. Probably those names that you call all serve on this committee. Even the mayor has signed the petition for Change the Name. What we're all about is this three-bedroom bed facility should not bear the name Homer G. Phillips. The Change the Name Coalition is led by our co-chairs, Ms. Ollie Mae Stewart, who's an activist for our senior citizens. And if you want to reach her and support this financially, you can write to Ms. Stewart at 3017 Park Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri. And her phone number at the center is 314-664-5024. The other co-chair is Ms. Zenobia Thompson. And Ms. Zenobia also was a graduate of Homer G. Phillips and eventually came the head nurse there. And she serves on as a co-chair of the Change the Name Coalition. And what are we all about? Changing the name. Not, are we dealing with? Somebody asked, why is this so important? because there has been war on our community. And
our
communities look the way they do because of the war.
Talking to the phone, talking a little louder.
The war on drugs, the war on crime, the war on poverty. And what we're dealing with right now, many people don't recognize this fourth war that's attacking our community. It's a cultural war, because keeping and taking that name is cultural appropriation. We're going to take your culture. We're going to steal your culture. We're going to take your legacy from you. That's cultural appropriation. And with any war, you have destruction, devastation, and exploitation. It is an exploiting of our community. And we're not asking much. We usually don't ask for much. But we are asking that this name be changed from this three-bed facility located on Jefferson and Cass, because it does not represent community. It does not represent those who have worked so diligently over the years to make our community a place, a refuge, a haven for those in need. And so we are working to change the name. And so if you want to reach Ms. Zenobia, you can email her at Zenobia Thompson@charter.com. And she'd be more than happy to receive your emails. But what are we all about? It's something very simple. Change the name. You are exploiting our community, and it is sad that there are those who are in the black community for economic reasons, or because they have achieved some economic prowess or educational prowess, or even if it's just their ego, they choose to side with those in the war of culture. And what we are dealing with here is simple cultural appropriation. That's where we stand. Change that name.
Absolutely. And I want you to know this. I stand with you guys. And if y'all have something big going on, if you contact me, I'll try to make my way down there. I'm in St. Louis. Not a lot, but I'm there. And like last time I was there for the Michael Brown in August doing that thing. And also to support the Uhura House and some of my other friends there. It was a really, really a busy week for me, but it's that I'm supporting y'all 100%. And anytime y'all have something that y'all want to talk about or come on the show and talk about, you're welcome to spend as much time as you want. So we want to make sure that people are on your good. Here's what I want y'all to do also. I want you to repeat that email and maybe a phone number that these people can call, because we have a huge listening crowd, not just on my Facebook, but also on my Blob Show. Actually, this is a Blob Show radio that we've been doing for years, and our audience is huge. When I say huge, I mean huge. They get a chance to listen to this all week long, and then people will listen, and they will want to hear it. And you can guarantee that you get over 10,000 people listening to what you guys had to say today, over 10,000. And they're going to do it, and they do it continuously, sometimes even as high as 20,000. It all depends on the show, but we're right there. But I want people to figure out a way how they can support y'all, and I want y'all to send me the email, text it to me. I'm going to send it out to my email list. And I got about 15,000 people on my email list, and it's growing and growing, because everybody wants to be part of something that's got legs and is really running. So I know how to do it. You got to have the numbers. If you're dealing with these devils, you got to have numbers. And I'm willing to do whatever necessary to get you the numbers, and I can do it. And that's a promise, not a say-so. You know, a lot of times people talk. Not only do I talk, but I also walk the walk. I make sure that, you know, that I'm doing what needs to be done, and to help other people and make sure that we're doing all the things that need to be done. And I just want to thank y'all for taking a stand, because we don't get too many black folks. You know, all the hell that we have been through, you got black folks who are willing to side with these folks, knowing what they're doing is wrong, and they think it's okay. That's what we have in the city of Benton Harbor. We have these guys, these elected officials, who do exactly nothing. They're worthless, and they didn't steal. They go around and thinking they're oil robbers or somebody, you know, think they're high and mighty, you know. We're here. But we got to get stronger. We got to get more people involved. We got to get people saying that I'm going to step out. I'm going to put everything on the line to help. And that's how when we win. I know how to win. And I'm going to do all I can to help y'all win. That's a promise. Not to say so. And let's stay focused on the big picture. And on that note, you got the closing words. Say what you got to say. And then we got to close it out.
Pray for us that we work together to change the name. We will not tolerate cultural appropriation in our community, communities around this nation. We will not stand for it because we recognize we are at war and this is just another battleground.
Absolutely, absolutely. And listen, I'm going to thank you guys so much for being on the show. You guys are huge. And, you know, I also do a show Monday at 1 o'clock. So if you want to say a few words tomorrow, let me know ahead of time and I can put you on the schedule and we can make it happen. But you let me know. You can email me, you can text me or whatever, and you can reach me at 269-257. You can reach me at 269-369-8257. Listen, let's talk. We're going to make it happen. Hey, on that note, we just ran out of time. I got just a few minutes to talk about my Soundboard of the Year Award, and we'll talk soon. Thank you for calling in. Have a great day. All right, we back to the make sure you get your vote in for the Soundboard of the Year Award. Ron Singleton has leapfrogged The mayor, Marcus Singer. You might call him Muhammad, but he's Marcus Singer to me. And he leapfrogged Judge Mayfield, and now he's ahead of them, which I know before this thing is over, you got until November 8th to get your vote in. Get your vote in and give these people some love. They deserve it. They have sold out our community, and they're going to continue to sell out our community. We, like I said, we even had a guy who stole a whole radio station, stole it, just took it from him, and think he's the heir to that radio station. That's not true. He stole the radio station, and he's going to continue to steal unless we stop him. So you got a choice. If you want to call and make sure that he never do it again, that's on you. But we have to stand up for our children, the future of our children. It's all about the future of our children. We could never, ever let these people continue to stay in control of not only of the city, but anything else. They're nothing but a bunch of losers. This guy, Marcus Singer, you call him Muhammad, his wife told him that she was a single parent with six kids. And this guy ain't took care of nobody. All he do is take care of himself. He don't care about nobody, but you never see him with his children. What kind of man going to be the mayor of a city if don't even take care of his children? But that's unfortunate. But we got to do what we have to do. Get your vote in for the Soundboard of the Year Award. It's going extremely well. It blew my mind because I never thought that it would take off like this. But unfortunately for some, I believe they're going, every state, every city, going to have a Soundboard of the Year Award. And I'm hoping that we can do it on a specific day when we have our banquet and we give the plaque to the person and let them know that we love them. And that, you know, as of now, you are now the Soundboard of the Year. You will not sell my children out. You will not sell out the future of my children. I am not going to sit back and allow you to do this. And we're going to continue to do what we need to do. And listen, we must make sure that we're doing all the things that we need to do to make this happen. And on that note, we have just ran out of time. Tomorrow, 1 o'clock, same station. Call in. If you want to speak, everybody get a chance to talk tomorrow. So give me a call at 323-642-1559, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great day.